Well, this week we open up the Parsha of Vayeshev, which deals, of course, primarily with the troubles between Yosef and the brothers. And we begin at the beginning, as the Torah describes the situation, as Yosef is younger, with him and Yaakov, with him and the brothers. How does it begin? Pasuk Gimel, Perek Lamed Zayin. Pasuk Gimel, V'Yisrael, Ahavis Yosef Mikol Banav. So why is it that, as the Torah itself states, Yaakov loved Yosef more than his other sons? Kiven Zikunim Hulo. Because he was the Ben Zikunim. That is the reason that is given, and as a result of that, V'Oselo Kasones Pasim, he makes him the special coat, which we'll get to quite soon. The question is, what is the meaning of the term Ben Zikunim? I think we have an idea of what it means. There's certainly something that we think it means. Namely, he's the son of his old age. And indeed, this is Rashi's first explanation. It would appear to be the simplest. Says Rashi on the word Ben Zikunim, Shenoladlo le'es ziknoso. Born to him when in Yaakov's old age, Ben Zikunim. Rashi then cites a second perush, V'unculus tirge. Unculus's translation of Ben Zikunim is Bar Chakim. Bar Chakim means a wise son. Unculus is taking the concept of Zikunim away from the issue of biological age, or years, and rather associated with wisdom. We say Zaken is a Chacham. That's quite a different Perush. Rashi goes on to say, Kol Mashalomad Mishem Ve'Ever Masarlo. Everything that Yaakov had learnt in Yeshiva Shem Ve'Ever, he gave to Yosef, which is itself worthwhile considering, because the amount of time that Yaakov spent learning Torah in the Yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever, whether it's in the beginning when he's described as Yosef Aholim, which Rashi explains means in the tent of Shem and in the tent of Ever, whether it's the additional 14 years that Rashi informs us that he learned in the Yeshiva of Ever when he ran away from Esav at the end of Toldos. Shem was no longer alive. It was only then the Yeshiva of Ever. That is many, many years of study. It's the notion that he was able to impart that, all of it, seemingly, Rashi says, all of it, to Yosef, who was sold by the age of 17, gives us, I think, at least some insight into what it means when it says that he is a Bar Chakim, a wise child. The final explanation of Rashi is very interesting. It's formally a third explanation, but many Mefarshim are inclined to see that it's really to be attached to one of the other two. Dover Acher says Rashi, Shayaziv ikunin shelo domelo, that Yosef's appearance, his facial appearance, was like that of Yaakov. It's very difficult to see that that is a third suggestion alongside these others, which are really much more to the heart of the matter. Ben Zikunim is a contraction of Ziv Ikunim. That's why the Maskela David says this is to be attached perhaps to the second one to fill out that idea, even though it's presented by Rashi as a Dover Acher. But our discussions will really be moving between the two, let's call them primary explanations of Rashi, or interpretations of Rashi. Number one, No lado le'esik noso, born in his old age, born to him in his old age. And number two, Bar Chakim, a wise son. And as we know, Koheles tells us, Tovim hashnai min ha'echad, two are always better than one, but not when studying Rashi. For Rashi, the ideal result is just the one. That means it has dealt with the question in a way which doesn't need anything else to be said. But if Rashi brings a second Perush, that means there's room for the second Perush. It will perhaps satisfy certain aspects of the situation that the first one didn't, and vice versa. And thus, we are beckoned to ask the question, why mara al-kocha? Why does Rashi see it as necessary or relevant or beneficial to bring the second perush, Unkelis's perush of Bar Hakim, that Yosef was a wise child, just leave it as born to Yaakov in his old age, which is your classic Ben Zikunim? But the truth is that the first perush, which we consider to be the more straightforward, actually has a number of difficulties associated with it, which are fielded by the Mizrahi, shall we say. The first is raised by the Ramban. After all, when we picture a Ben Zikunim, and he's the child that was born in his old age, it sounds like all the others were born when he was younger. That's not really the case. As if to say, Yaakov gets married at the age of 84. And he begins to have children, or let's, shall we say, a few months later or a year later, let's call it 85. So his oldest was born, he was 85. That's already a Ben Zikunim by many reckonings. Now Yosef was born 6 years later when he's 91. So it's interesting that Reuven, the oldest, is already a Ben Zikunim, one could say. I mean, it's not the Ben Zikunim, but it's hardly what distinguishes Yosef from the others is that Yosef was old. Consider Leah has six children within those 6 or 7 years, so, which means that the youngest of her children, which is Zevulun, was born a year before Yosef. But Yosef is the Ben Zikunim. They're all Ben Zikunim. Well, the Mizrahi says yes, but the critical word here is the word lo. Ben Zikunim hu lo, as if to say he was the one that Yaakov really took to as, you know, having been born at that time, even though one could say that they all qualified. But that's a difficulty. That is already one reason why we can understand that Rashi would have seen fit to include another interpretation of Ben Zikunim, because it was just about his being old when elderly, when Yosef was born, he was elderly when they were all born. But it's Ben Zikunim hu lo, says the Mizrahi. But there's an additional problem. there was a son who was born when Yaakov was yet older. And that's Binyamin. So if we're already taking the chronological approach, so Binyamin is separated by Yosef by approximately 8 years. So he's the real Ben Zikunim, seemingly, if it's really that explanation. Why then would Yosef be called the Ben Zikunim if Binyamin is Ben Zikunim more? But once again, says the Mizrahi, Ben Zikunim hulo. He mentions a very interesting possibility, and that is that with all the sons having been born close together, so Yosef was the youngest for a long time, meaning there were 8 years before which anyone else was born, and those were the years that Yosef was really able to and Yaakov connect together and form a special Ben Zikunim relationship, which never really moved away even after Binyamin was born. But these are responses to the questions, and the questions themselves can quite easily have moved Rashi to say, bring in Unkelus also. It's not just about Yaakov being old. That's not the only thing. It's about Yosef being wise, which is a very different explanation. I would like to suggest that perhaps there is another reason why Rashi saw fit to cite Unkelus, and it's actually based on another comment of Unkelus in what I believe is the only other place in the Torah where we have this idea of a son born in his old age. And that is in the beginning of Parshas Vayigash, when Vayigash Elav Yehuda, in a couple of weeks' time, and he starts to replay the story just to get context as to what happened from the time they came down to Egypt. And the first thing he says is, you asked, do you have a father? Do you have a brother? Vanomer el Adoni. This is in the beginning of Vayigash. And we said to you, yes, yesh lanu avzaken. We have an elderly father, ve yeled zikunim katan. And left behind is Yeled Zikunim. Yosef is, we don't know where he is, but Binyamin is called, is the Yeled Zikunim. So there, they call Binyamin Yeled Zikunim. He's the only one left. But I think of crucial significance is that they don't refer to him as a Ben Zikunim, which is the expression that we have taken to using. They call him a Yeled Zikunim. But what is the difference between a Ben Zikunim and a Yeled Zikunim? Lest we think that Ben denotes someone who's older already and Yeled is someone who's younger, it's not so. Yosef in our parsha is called Ben Zikunim at the age of 17. At the time that Yehuda, in 2 weeks' time in Vayigash, is describing Binyamin, 20 years have elapsed. Binyamin is over 30, and he's still called Yeled Zikunim. So it's not about age. The younger child is called Yeled Zikunim, and as he grows older, Ben Zikunim. That's not so at all. But that is why I believe that Unculus translates Ben Zikunim as Bar Hakim. Because the difference between the word Yeled and Ben is Yeled is only about being born. Yeled from the word Nolad. When was he born? How was he born? Etc. But Ben, it has a broader context, potentially. Namely, we can talk about Ben as being a characteristic of the person. A person could be a Ben Torah. In the words, the parlance of the Chumash, he could be a Ben Belial. He could be a Ben Moves. It's not a biological thing. It's a depiction of a character trait of the person. And therefore, I think that the reason why Rashi says one needs to say more in our parsha on the words Ben Zikunim than the fact that he was born when Yaakov was in his old age, because then he would have been called a Yeled Zikunim. Because then it's just about when he was born. But if he's called a Ben Zikunim, it's about him. And corroboration of this approach, I think, can be found in Unculus himself, because Unculus actually translates the terms Ben Zikunim and Yeled Zikunim differently. Ben Zikunim in our parsha, he translates as Bar Hakim, as we saw, a wise son. Yeled Zikunim in Parshas Vayigash, Unculus translates as Yeled Zikunim, Yeled Sivtin, or Bar Sivtin. Just get the pasuk here. Yeled Zikunim, Bar Sivtin. Sivtin from the word seva, old age. So in other words, when it says Yeled Zikunim, Unculus does translate it as being the son of his old age. Because if it's Yeled, it's about when he was born. But the very same Unculus translates Ben Zikunim differently because it uses the word Ben and not the word Yeled. So that, I believe, is another reason why Rashi brings the second Perush to explain, aside from everything else, the use of the word Ben here and not the word Yeled. And yet it remains that in our own parlance, we will always call the child born when the father is older, we'll call them a Ben Zikunim, we won't call them a Yeled Zikunim. I wouldn't make an issue out of it, but I believe this is part of what's going on in the Rashi. So as a result of Yaakov's special relationship with Yosef, he makes him a Kesonis Pasim, and this was the bone of quite some contention. And indeed, this inyan follows the brothers down even as we get to the sale, because the aftermath of the sale involves the Kesonis Pasim. And that is described in Pasuk Lamed Beis. They've sold him to Mitzrayim. And then they take the coat, they dip it in blood, and send it back to Yaakov to make it look like Yosef was attacked by a wild animal. And the Pasuk Lamed Beis, which describes this, is Vayishalchu es Kesonis Hapasim. They send the Kesonis Pasim, Vayaviu el Avihem, and they bring it to their father, Vayomru Zos Matzanu, we found this, Hakerna, please recognize, identify it, please, Hakesonis Bincha Hi Imlo, is this your son's coat or not? And he did recognize it, and he concluded the worst and was plunged into mourning. And the rest, of course, is the story as it unfolds. But there's a basic difficulty with a simple reading of this pasuk, because it begins by saying, "Vayishalchu es ksonas hapasim." They sent the ksonas, meaning the brothers sent it, "Vayaviu elaviem," and then they brought it. How can they send it and bring it? If they've sent it, presumably they sent it with someone, but then they don't have it anymore. So then what's to bring? Even just to read the pasuk now in a smooth way, they send it and they bring it. You can't bring it once you've sent it. Someone else can bring it, but you've already sent it. This question is raised by the Ramban, and the Ramban actually gives two perushim, two responses to this very simple question, this very basic question. The first is that indeed, Vayishalchu, that means the brothers, they sent the coat, meaning they sent the coat to Yaakov with people. Perhaps they didn't want to face him directly with this. So they sent it in the hands of others, which means that the second phrase, Vayaviu el avihem, and they brought it to their father, means the shlichim brought it, the emissaries. So part one is the brothers entrusted to these emissaries, whoever they are. And part two is Vayaviu, the emissaries now bring it to Yaakov. And actually, this might explain, says Ramban, why the phraseology is, please identify this, is this your son's coat? It's very interesting for Yosef's own brothers to talk about him as Yaakov's son, unless they mean something more than just talking about Yosef. So say, is this Yosef's coat? Hakason is bincha, as if they have nothing to do with him. I mean, why would they talk to their father that way? But according to this interpretation, says Ramban, they say Hakason is bincha because these aren't Yosef's brothers that are bringing it to Yaakov. These are stam people. So they'd say, is this your son's coat? He's not related to them. That is the first response of Ramban. To summarize, Vayishalchu, the brothers sent it in the hands of others, and those others, Vayoviu, to Yaakov. The second perush, which is very, very different, says Ramban, the word Vayishalchu is not about sending at all. He cites a pasuk in Iyov, which uses the word l'shaleach or l'shalach as a term of cutting or tearing. Bashelach yavru. According to this second response, says Ramban, you know what Vayishalchu es ksonas hapasim means? They ripped it up. It's not about sending it to anyone or through anyone. They tore it up because they're about to say that he was attacked by a wild animal. So if the coat is intact, it doesn't fit the... So they tore it up and dipped it in blood. And that's how it was sent. So they brought it then because they hadn't sent it with anyone. Vayishalchu means they ripped it. And then they brought it, which again would bring back the question, why are they calling Yosef Ksonas Bincha, etc. So these are the Ramban's two responses to the, how does sending to go together with bringing? But let us go back to his first answer. His first answer is they sent it with shlichim, with emissaries, and the emissaries brought. There is a point of order here. And that is, the word in the pasuk is Vayishalchu. Now, it's important to realize in Lashon HaKodesh, and we know it, but it's important to state it and have it in front of us, there are two very similar terms when it comes to Shin Lamed Chet. But they're not the same. One is Lishloach, and one is Lishalach. What is the difference between Lishloach and Lishalach? There's really two ways to send something. You can send something or you can send someone, shall we say, on a mission, like Shaliach, or you can send something in a way of just sending it away. And a very easy way to see the difference between them is that there are two parshas. One's called Vayishlach and one's called Bishalach. And they're not the same. Vayishlach is Yaakov sending messengers, and he wants to hear back from them. He's sending them on a mission. And that's why it says Vayishlach, not Vayishalach. Vayishlach, Yaakov Malachim. But Lishalach is to send something away, like the Sa'ir La'azazel in Yom Kippur. Lishalach Oso La'azazel. You're not intending to see it again anytime soon. You're not sending it on a mission. You're sending it away. If that's true, so let's come back to Pasuk Lamed Beis and notice something very interesting. The Pasuk says, Vayishalchu es kasonas hapasim. It uses the expression lishalach. Sounds like they threw it away. But that now ruins everything. In other words, how can you throw it away and then ever expect it to get to Yaakov? It should have said vayishlechu. They sent it. Vayishlechu es kasonas hapasim. And not vayishalchu. And although it's a fine point, the difference between these two is decisive. Perhaps one could say they sent the coat away, but they sent it with people, but they didn't expect to see the coat again. But it needs resolution. Vayishalchu es kasonas hapasim. And this will give us a lead in into a very different understanding of what happened at this stage in the story. And it's found in the Sefer called Meleches Machsheves, which is written by one of the great Italian Talmidei Chachamim of the 1600s or 1700s, Rabbi Moshe Chafetz is his name. And he says, if you want to understand what's happening here, you need to go back to when they remove the coat from Yosef in the first place. And that is described in Pasuk Kaf Gimel. So let us go back to Kaf Gimel, where Yosef approaches them, and the Pasuk reads as follows. Vayihi kasher bar Yosef el achav. When Yosef approached them, the brothers, vayavshitu es Yosef es kutanto. They stripped Yosef of his coat. We're translating kasonis as coat. Others say shirt or tunic, but coat for simplicity. Es kasonis hapasim asher alav. The kasonis pasim that was on him. If we read or pay careful attention to this pasuk, we see that the pasuk refers to kutanto, his coat, and then says es kasonis hapasim asher alav, the kasonis pasim that was on him. Which means we need to ask perhaps a rather deconstructive question here, maybe a disarming question, and that is, how many coats did Yosef have? Because there's a reference to his coat, and there's a reference to the pasim coat. And on this matter, actually, opinion is divided. The Mizrahi, again, Rabbi Eliyahu Mizrahi, is quite adamant that there is only one coat being referred to here. The reason why you have this double reference, says the Mizrahi, of first kutanto, his kasonas, and then kasonas apasim, is for emphatic purposes. In other words, the coat. And let us all remind ourselves, the very coat, that kasonas pasim, which was so significant in this whole story. So it's another phrase, because it's a reiteration for emphasis. Mm-hmm. However, there are other Mefarshim, and among them Mefarshei Rashi, Maharal, and others, who are of the opinion that actually this Pasuk is referring to two separate coats. Because when Yaakov makes for Yosef a kasonis pasim, according to these Mefarshim, that is not something to be worn instead of his normal kasonis, but on top of his normal kasonis. That's really the premise here. And therefore, the Pasuk says, and refers to both of them, they stripped him of the kasonis, which is his regular kasonis, like everyone else had. And as kasonis hapasim, and now the word asher alav, which also seems redundant on him. Where else is it going to be if not on him? The words are redundant. If a person is wearing something, it's on him. But here the point is that this was the kasonis pasim, says Maharal, which was on the regular kasonis. So in other words, they removed the kasonis together with the kasonis hapasim asher alav. But that was on top of that, on top of it. Now, the Meleches Machsheves, Rabbi Moshe Chayfetz, is very close to that understanding, but the matter is not fully resolved yet, for a simple reason. Alav is a masculine pronoun, on him, or it, masculine. Kasonis is a feminine noun. Hakasonis bin chahi. Which means, if the words es kasonis hapasim asher alav mean the kasonis hapasim which was on the regular kasonis, kasonis is feminine. It should have been es kasonis hapasim asher aleha. And that is why, says the Meleches Machsheves, Rabbi Moshe Chayfetz, we need to say just a little bit more. Yosef wore, firstly, his regular kasonis, and on top of that, the kasonis pasim. That's how he wore it generally, but not on this occasion. For a simple reason. The kasonis pasim, Yosef knows, is the point of much contention among the brothers. So now, here he is, being sent to them. The feelings are not as good as they should be between the brothers. And here is Yosef being sent far away from home. As soon as they see the kasonis pasim, that's it. If Yosef only had the choice, he wouldn't wear it at all. But his father gave it to him. So he can't just not wear it. So what does he do? On this one occasion, Yosef reversed the coats. He wore the kasonis pasim underneath and the regular kasonis on top. Thus, on the one hand, not goading on the brothers unnecessarily, but on the other hand, his father gave it to him. He has to wear it, so he wore it underneath. And that is why, says Meleches Machsheves, when the brothers remove the coat, it says, Vayavshitu es Yosef es kutanto, the first kasonis that they took off was the regular kasonis, because that's the one that he was wearing on top. And then, es kasonis hapasim, asher alav. And what does asher alav mean? It means on him, meaning directly on him. Unlike normally where he would wear the kasonis pasim on top of the regular kasonis, in this instance, he was wearing the kasonis pasim directly on himself. That's hakasonis hapasim, asher alav. Now, achar hadvarim ha'eile. So once we've understood the psukim in this way, we've got to go back to our original question. They sent the coat and they brought it. And we asked, if you sent it, how can you bring it? We've seen a couple of responses from Ramban. It says, Meleches Machsheves, if you wish to understand how they can send the coat and still bring it, we need to ask a simple question. Which coats are we talking about? For that, we need to go back to the previous pasuk. The previous pasuk says, and by previous I mean pasuk lamed aleph. Here we are, perik lamed zayin, pasuk lamed aleph. And here we might find a bit of a surprise. The pasuk reads, "Vayikru es kasonis Yosef." They took the kasonis. Vayishchatu se'irizim. They shechted a goat. Vayitbelu es hakotonis badam, and they dipped the kasonis in dam. Which coat did they dip in blood? We understand the kasonis pasim, but having seen that there's two kasonises here, and the regular kasonis is called kasonis, and the kasonis pasim is called kasonis pasim. And here it says they took the kasonis of Yosef. The one they dipped in blood was not the kasonis pasim, it was his regular coat. Now, Why would they choose that one to dip in blood? Hard to say. Maybe they didn't want to have anything to do with the Kasonas Passim. Maybe they couldn't bring themselves to bring back the Kasonas Passim to Yaakov. So they chose the regular Kasonas. And that's the one that was brought back. And that is why, when they bring it back, they say, Hakerna. Can you identify this? What type of a question is that if it's the Kasonas Passim? The Kasonas Passim is so distinctive. To say, can you identify this? As soon as you see it, you know. But if it's Yosef's regular coat, so that everything is individual, but you've got to look a bit closer to know. Hakerna. You need to actually identify it. So that's the one they dipped in blood, his regular coat, and that's the one they brought back. What about the Kasonas Passim? Whatever happened to that? Says the beginning of the next pasuk. Vayishalchu es Kasonas Passim. They threw it away. We noted that l'shalach is to discard. They discarded it. We asked, how can you send something and then bring it? But if we take the word vayishalchu at its simple meaning that they discarded, the one they discarded isn't the one they brought. They discarded the Kasonas Passim and they brought the regular Kasonas. It's true that the verb vayaviu follows vayishalchu. That is true. But it's also true that it doesn't say vayivieha. There is no pronoun attaching it to the one that was sent, leaving it open to indeed understand that with the Kasonas Passim, they discarded it, and this is the one that they brought. So where is the Kasonas Passim now? Somewhere in a field, in Dothan. We don't know. That's the one that they sent to the side as they brought back the regular Kasonas with Yaakov. So these are very, very thought-provoking ideas from a story that we know so well, but to look at the psukim closer, and we would need to contend with all of these questions. And this is the classic explanation given by Rabbi Moshe Chayfetz in the Sefer Meleches Machsheves. And all of this now leads us to the sale itself. And once again, if we take a look at the psukim, we might be drawn in to a deeper level of understanding. The psukim of the sale are basically described in pasuk, Perek Lamed Zayin, pasuk Kaf Vav, Kaf Zayin, Kaf Ches. And if we just acclimatize ourselves to reading those psukim, then we'll see what there is to discuss regarding that. Vayomer Yehuda, pasuk Kaf Vav, Vayomer Yehuda el Achav. Yosef isn't thrown into a pit, but Yehuda says, Mabet Sakin Aroga Sachinu. What will we gain if we kill him? V'chisino esdomo. He's already seen a caravan of Yishmaelim. L'chuvenim kohenu l'Yishmaelim. Let's send him to the Yishmaelim. V'yadeinu al tibo. We said that we won't actually have killed him, you know, directly. Ki achinu b'sareinu hum. Even though the brothers really felt that they were correct in the way they dealt with Yosef, for all the reasons that the Mefarshim discussed, they thought that Yosef, through his bad reports, was looking to bring them into disrepute and perhaps sideline them from the future of the Jewish people, as had happened in the first generation with Yishmael and Yitzchak, and the second generation with Esav and Yaakov. They saw that Yosef was looking to do that again. Literally, pikuach nefesh, kipshuto. And all of the other reasons that are given for the way. So they really felt that taking Yosef out of harm's way, that is to say, out of the ability to harm them, was absolutely justified. But Yehuda says, but to kill him is unnecessary. Sell him down to Egypt, and our troubles will be over. Vayishmu echav, and the brothers heard, and vayavu anashim midyanim sochorim vayimshihu. They raid, they take Yosef up. Vayimkuras Yosef lishmaelim. They sell him to Yishmaelim beesrim kesef, for 20 pieces of silver, which isn't an enormous amount of money, but as the Mefarshim point out, Yosef didn't really look like he was in such good shape at that time, and therefore, things being what they are, just to get the sale through, 20 pieces of silver, and that's that. Now, okay. The next they hear, we hear about the sale, will be when Yosef confronts them. All those years later, Ani, as he reveals his identity to them, Ani Yosef Achechem, again in Vayigash, I'm Yosef, your brother, Hashem Achartem Osi Mitzrayim. I'm the one that you sold to Mitzrayim. The reason why we need to still ponder this matter and contemplate it is if we go back to Pasuk Kaf Ches and read carefully. Vayavru Anashim Midyanim Socharim. So you have these Midianite merchants. They pass by. Vayimshechu Vayalu Es Yosef Min Abor. They draw up and raise Yosef out of the pit. Vayimkru Es Yosef La Yishmaelim. And they sell him to Yishmaelim. Now, again, a very, very basic question. The sale is all described as something that they did. They drew him up. They sold him to the Ishmaelites. Who are they? Well, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, the brothers. But we do note that the brothers have not been mentioned in this pasuk. On the contrary, the most recently mentioned group are these Midianite merchants. A simple reading of the pasuk would be Vayavru Anashim Midianim Sochurim. Midianite merchants pass by Vayim Shichu, and they meaning these merchants, drew him up, and they sold him to the Ishmaelim. There is a major question among the Rishonim and Achronim. What is the role of these merchants here? I mean, how many people are in the mix? How many people are in this transaction? We understand he was sold to Ishmaelim. So what are these Midianites doing there? What are they? Are they brokers? Are they... They just seem to be in the way. But a simple reading of the pasuk would seem to say that it's the Midianites who actually sold him to the Ishmaelim. Now, it's very easy to understand why Rashi does not explain that way, but rather it's the brothers. Because the pasuk earlier has the brothers saying that they want to sell him to the Ishmaelites. So in other words, we already know the plan. There's no reason to suspect that that's what the very next pasuk describes them as doing. Let's sell him to the Ishmaelites. And they did. So although syntactically, the pronoun of they raising Yosef, you have to skip over these Midianim and go back to the earlier verse. But context prevails. Background wins out. It's the brothers who wanted to sell him. It's the brothers who had the plan. And it's the brothers who do so. As Yosef says, I'm your brother. I'm Yosef, whom you sold to Mitzrayim. However, there are those who understand that it really was not the brothers who sold Yosef. It was the Midianites. And this itself has two possibilities. One in conjunction with the brothers and one with no connection to them at all. Let's take them one by one. The first approach, after all, our question was, Yehuda has said, let's sell him. So it sounds like that's what they did. However, another of the great Italian Gedolim, this time from the 1500s, Rabbi Azaria Figo, or Feggio, the author of the drushes Bina Le'itim, discusses this in one of his drushes. He was the rabbi in Pisa and in Venice in the 1500s. And he's quoted by the Malbim. If you look in the Malbim, he will cite Reish Ayin Pei. Reish Ayin Pei is Rabbi Azaria Figo. And he asks another simple question. It's possible to read these psukim so many times and not ask these questions. But what does Yehuda say in Pasuk Kaf Zayin? Lechu v'nim kerenu la Yishma'elim. Lechu v'nim kerenu la Yishma'elim. What does the word lechu mean? Literally, The word lechu means let's go. So whenever you see the word lechu, I think a pertinent question is, go where? Where are we meant to go? And perhaps one might understand that lechu, it just means let's go, means let's go with this idea. So it's not geographical to go somewhere, it's just to let's get going, meaning let's do this. And perhaps that's the way we would normally understand. But the Bina Le'itim says something quite astounding. Lechu means let's go away. But why do you want to go away? Because the plan is to sell Yosef to the Ishmaelim. But Yehuda already sees there's so many people passing by that not only do they not wish to take action directly against Yosef to kill him, they also don't want to take action directly against him to sell him. But if you don't sell him, who will? The answer is, there's midyanim around. There's merchants around. They're looking for things to sell. Things and people. And therefore, says Pasuk Kavav, or pardon me, Pasuk Kavav says, we shouldn't kill him. And moreover, Pasuk Kav Zayin, lechu, let's go away. V'nim kirenu, and that way we'll be able to sell him. But yadeinu al tihibo, we will not have done it directly. Let other people do that for us. So it could be that the brothers are monitoring what's happening. But this is now kipshuto, that it's the Midianites who pass by. They may have heard cries for help. They may have heard sounds. They have noticed that Yosef is there. They bring him up. He's good for the selling. And they sell. And thus were the brothers' plans fulfilled via the Midianim. That is the explanation of the Bina Le'itim, Rabbi Azariah Figo, and it is cited and endorsed as the correct approach by the Malbim. But there is another way of understanding how the brothers were not involved. In some respects, one could say it's even more radical. But there are a number of Rishonim who subscribe to this. Rashbam, Rabbeinu Bachya, Chizkuni. And that is, and the one who leads here is Rashbam. And again, Rashbam is Rashi's grandson, but his job is to explain the psukim al derech hapshat, the way he understands the pshat of those psukim, and that's what he does. The brothers had thrown Yosef in a pit, and then in Pasuk Kafei Vayeshvu Lechol Lechem, they sit down to eat. They're not by the pit at that stage. They've moved away from the pit. And at a distance, again, to read Pasuk Kafei, Vayeshvu Lechol Lechem, Vayesu Einehem, they raise up their eyes, Vayu, Vene Orchas Yishmaelim, Ba'amil Gilad, they see from a distance a caravan of Yishmaelim. Yehuda says, I have an idea. Let's sell Yosef to the Yishmaelim. That was the plan. It never happened. Because here they are, a good distance away. They feel perhaps that they have time before the Ishmaelim approach. But in the interim, Pasuk Kaf Zayin, pardon me, Kaf Ches, Vayavru Anashim Midyanim. But who passes by? Before the brothers are able to return to the pit, who passes by? Anashim Midyanim Socharim. They take Yosef out of the pit. They sell him to the Ishmaelim. According to the Rashbam, the brothers never knew. They didn't sell Yosef, and they didn't know. The next time they saw Yosef was in Mitzrayim all those years later. But he was gone from the pit before they returned, which means that as the Pasuk describes Reuven in Pasuk Kaftes, Vayoshev Reuven el Habor, Vinei en Yosef Habor. Reuven goes back, Yosef is not there, and he doesn't know what happened. And again, one could say on a pshat level, Reuven is representing the brothers here. They sent Reuven right to go and get Yosef. He doesn't know. Hayeled einenu. Vayoshev elecha vayomer li hayeled einenu. According to the Rashbam, that was a surprise for all of them. They didn't realize that Yosef had already been removed from the pit. But the ones who stole the ones who sold Yosef were, as the pasuk suggests in Kafches, Anashim Midyanim Socharim. Interestingly, the Tur, and we know that the Tur on the Chumash is famous for the commentary Bal Haturim, which is Ramazim in Gematrios. That was the part of his weekly commentary. He also has a Parshanut commentary, which is in a separate volume now, Perush HaTorah Aruch. He quotes and summarizes in digest form the words of earlier Rishonim. He adds his own suggestions, and he cites this idea that the brothers never knew. And it was Yosef who was sold by the Midyanim, says the Torah. This will explain to us the way that Yosef describes his situation at the end of our parsha. So as we know, at the end, he finds himself in jail, and he's there with the butler and the baker, or the chief butler and the chief baker. And he interprets the Sarah Mashkim's dream as if to say, in three days' time, you will be released. And then he asks the Sarah Mashkim, please remember me. Kim zechartani, remember me. Vizkartani el para, and remember me to para. And then Yosef says, if you hear these words, Ki gunov gunavti me eretz ha-ivrim. I was stolen from the land of the Ivrim. I was kidnapped. Gunavti me eretz ha-ivrim. Says the Tur, if Yosef was sold by the brothers, that's not called being stolen. That's being sold. He wasn't stolen. The brothers sold him. He should have said, for comparison's sake, like Esther says, Ki nimkarnu ani v'ami. He should have said, Ki nimkarti mi eretz ivrim. I was sold down from the land of the Ivrim. But he says, Ki gunavti. And this really, says the Tur, corroborates the understanding that the brothers weren't involved. So, which means that the Midyanim kidnapped him. He really was stolen. Gunov gunavti mi eretz ivrim. The Chizkuni likewise, who endorses this approach, which is, it's quite, if we've never considered it, it's quite a shock. But the approach that the brothers were not involved in the sale and didn't know about the sale, says the Chizkuni, that will also explain to us how Yosef is basically practically able to get away with everything that he does in Egypt, and none of them seem to suspect that maybe it's Yosef. Until he says that he's Yosef and they can't believe it. Everything he's doing, if they sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim, they know that Yosef is in Mitzrayim. So he's there somewhere and he's doing all of this. Someone is doing all of these things. That it doesn't register with anyone that somehow this is connected to Yosef. Says the Chizkuni, if they were not involved in the sale, they literally have no idea where Yosef is, if he's alive, and even if he is, where is he? They lost contact with him the last time they saw him in the pit. When you're not expecting someone to be somewhere, anything can happen before you think, well, maybe this is them. So that whole part of the story now is quite different. The only thing, though, is here we are, and the pasuk says, or perhaps could be understood as saying, that it wasn't the brothers that actually sold Yosef down. Rather, it was the Midyanim, whoever they are. But Yosef seems to say differently. I mean, Yosef's words, when he finally reveals his identity to the brothers, as we've mentioned a couple of times, is, Ani Yosef Achechem Asher Mecharta Mosi Mitzrayim. I'm your brother who sold you down to Mitzrayim. I mean, that is basically black on white. The brother sold him. Says the Rashbam, it doesn't mean that they sold him. There is no question that if it were not for the brothers, he wouldn't have been sold. When Yosef confronts them in that way, I'm your brother Yosef, who you sold to Mitzrayim, what he's saying is, you were the cause of the sale. If you hadn't thrown me in a pit and left me there, I never would have been sold to Mitzrayim. So you're a grommer. You as good as sold me, even if you didn't. And now I hear that you never had anything to do with it. You didn't know about it. There's no question that if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have been sold. That's called you selling me down to Mitzrayim. You contributed enough to the to what ultimately happened. But that's quite a chiddush on the part of the Rashbam. Yosef himself says explicitly, "You sold me," and Rashbam says, "You basically led me to be sold." But even if you didn't sell me directly, and even if you didn't know anything about it. But there is another point to be considered here, and this is discussed by Rabbeinu Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachya concurs with the Rashbam. The brothers didn't sell him. And he brings us more into the world of Chazal. It's a well-known Masorah. It's a well-known tradition that we have. There is a concept of Asara Haruge Malchus. And Asara Haruge Malchus are those 10. We read about it on Yom Kippur. We read about it on Tisha B'Av in somewhat different ways, each way in a way that's appropriate for the day. But what is the background? The background is that this was to expiate for the sale of Yosef. And here we are suggesting that the brothers didn't sell Yosef in the first place. So a corollary of this entire idea is to say that even if the brothers didn't directly sell him, but to have done what they did in a way that allowed him to be sold, even by others, already required expiation and atonement and rectification on the part of the Asara Haruge Malchus. So it's a chiddush, Rabbi Nabachi says this explicitly, it is a chiddush in the understanding that even if they did not sell him directly, it still needed to be expiated. One thing I will say before coming back to Asara Haruge Malchus is that the whole situation here, the psukim now are riveting in terms of how to read them, and what are their implications, and what are their intonations and ramifications. Who actually sold Yosef down to Mitzrayim? That now is a subject of a machlokas. There's different opinions. But one thing no one can deny, namely, the Pasuk doesn't explicitly say the brothers sold him down to Mitzrayim. That's a fact. And what does that mean? It could now mean a couple of things. It could mean perhaps the reason why the Pasuk doesn't say they sold him to Mitzrayim is because they didn't, which is the approach of the Rashbam. But if you take the approach of Rashi, that it's the brothers that took him out of the pit, and Mechartem Osi Mitzrayim is Kipshuto, you sold me to Egypt. Why would the Pasuk not say it explicitly? And this brings us into another matter altogether. Namely, there are some things that for various reasons the Torah does not specify explicitly. Sometimes there are wrongdoings and the Torah withholds details of identities and so on. And this could be for a couple of reasons. And the Rechaim HaKodesh discusses this in a number of places. And perhaps there are opposite reasons. Sometimes the crime is too big, that in addition to the punishment, it is enshrined now black on white in the text of the Torah that this is what was done. Sometimes it's too much. To write in the Torah to the now eternal degradation and shame of the perpetrators, it's too much. Work it out. The Torah isn't, or as Rav Hyman used to say, there's some things even the Torah can't bring itself to say. Torah cannot bring itself to say that the brothers sold Yosef. Work it out. In the same way that the Torah could not bring itself to say that at the time of the Chet HaEgel they killed Chur, who some things just can't even be said. And to write it in the Torah is a mark of shame that is too much. It is possible that there's another reason why the Torah doesn't state it explicitly. Namely, perhaps this is in recognition of the fact that the brothers actually thought they were doing the right thing. And therefore, as true as it wasn't, and there's in addition to which there's a whole plan going on here, a master plan on Hashem's part, but the fact that it was not capricious or malicious in that way, but rather they really felt that they were justified. Perhaps in deference to that, the Torah spares them the pasuk which says the brothers sold Yosef to Mitzrayim. Yosef can say it, and the Torah will quote him, but the Torah won't say it. These are very interesting shilas, which really go to the heart of what the Torah states explicitly and what the Torah leaves us to work out for ourselves. But back to the Asara Haruge Malchus. There is a point, it's easy to pass over, but it's interesting that Asara Haruge Malchus, many, many years, centuries after the sale of Yosef, why at that time? It's such a delay. And then it comes back. But the answer, say Mefarshim, is because the sale of Yosef never really went away. The sale of Yosef is strife among brothers. Would that it were healed completely. You would have perfect unity among the Jewish people, which we know is yet to happen. We've had our moments, we've had our shining moments of unity, but the issue is never fully resolved. It's for this reason the Medrash says in Mishlei, the Medrash Shocher Tov in Mishlei says that every generation tastes something of the retribution from the sale of Yosef. And that's the Meshech Chochma in Parsha Zacharemos explains, it's because every generation perpetuates it in one form or another, to a greater or lesser degree, hopefully lesser, but it hasn't yet been fully healed. That's why we've cited this on a number of occasions. We say on Yom Kippur, Ki ata solchan Yisrael u'machalan neshiv te Yishurun l'chol devador. Refer to Hashem forgiving Yisrael and Shiv te Yishurun. Yisrael is for the Chet Egel, which also follows us down. But Shiv te Yishurun is a reference to the sale of Yosef. And b'chol devador. And sometimes it's better, sometimes it's worse, and sometimes it's chronically worse. And when was it ever worse than the time of the second destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, which was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam? So at that time, if ever there was a time where comeuppance and retribution for the sale of Yosef, which was still pending, would be called in, it's at the time of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And that's when the Asara Haruge Malchus happened. But it didn't end there either. Because as we say, Bechol Dor Vador. So this remains the call to us, the Jewish people, to do what we can in our own sphere, as far as we can, to promote love and unity among the Jewish people. It's to end the sale of Yosef. The sale of Yosef is still going on. It ends when we shut it down. And that is when we fully repair all than any of the negativity that led to it and replace that with the love that should exist among the Jewish people. At certain times, it's our enemies that bring it out. But as we so often say, how good it would be if the unity was a product of our love for ourselves, not our love for each other, not our fear of our enemies. We shouldn't need them. We'd love for them to be rendered redundant as soon as possible in their role as bringing about unity of the Jewish people. That this is something we should be able to take care of and produce ourselves. Mitzvah Hashem, as we take to heart the lesson of the sale of Yosef and all of the principles and ideas that accompany it, we should indeed end the sale of Yosef. And that is something that should bring back all the love of the Jewish people. And their achdus, which should bring Hashem back to us as well completely, v'simchas Elokeinu al Roshenu b'meheira b'yameinu. Amen.